Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Q&A edition of Weekly Manga Recap for April 2017. I'm Nick with Chris. We're going to answer your questions today.
Yes, I am. And yes, we are.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, I guess that answers the question of if you actually need me to be here then.
Nope. Get out of here, Nick. Get out of here. Boo! Go home, Nick. Boo! Hiss!
I mean, I'm already home. I just have to, like, reach over and hit the red hang-up icon.
Okay. Guys, I'm doing all the questions now. Send in all your first questions, and I'm going to clear through them all. Oh, this first question has a lot of math to it. Nick, help me! Get our Q&A. Monthly Q&A, Nick.
Yes. Normally, we also start things off by reading off some answers that we got, and also asking each other a question, though. So
yes.
I think we should kick off with that.
So, last month, we actually technically answered quite a few questions, posed a few different questions to our audience.
Yes,
mainly,
that's correct.
It was about documentaries. I had asked Nick about a documentary question, and I asked if you could see any, basically create any documentary about the manga industry, whether it be an actual manga about someone or a particular area within the manga industry, or a fictional documentary set within one of the manga that's out there, what would you want to see? And you also asked what people's first game they remember playing was.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of questions on the documentary start. A few questions actually about the first game they played start. One of the ones we got most commonly, actually, was for the in-world documentary. A lot of people really wanted to see a documentary about the Totsuki Institute, which I think would be an astoundingly interesting documentary to watch.
And that sounds like it would, you know, not be too difficult to imagine, actually. But yeah, I'm sure that there's a whole history behind it, and maybe you could do something where, like, they would have a segment following a few different students, because they would usually do that in that type of documentary. Sure.
Oh, and you definitely, like, you reveal the school to just be this one thing at the start, and then you reveal halfway through that, yes, and there's also this council of 10 students who basically decide the future of the academy with their decisions. You're like, holy crap, this is incredible.
Yeah, you could follow some students who are at, like, different points in their academic career. Like, one is on the verge of potentially getting kicked out, but one's on the verge of, like, joining the council.
So you
get different stories from that.
There's definitely a very big range you can go with for that academy. So I think that'd be great. Lucky Swordsman, the Great Rhapsode, also suggested, both individually, suggested a real-life documentary on the life of Mashima Hiro. And part of it's like the joke of, like, how, you know, is he just a hentai artist and no one really realizes it? But I would truly be fascinated to see what this guy does and how he manages to reach a point where he actually had extra time left over from his workload to work on extra chapters or alternate series that other mangaka are like, I don't have time for my family. Like, but he has time to work on other series and things like that. I'd really be curious to see how, like, what his style is that, like, kind of enables that.
Yeah.
Campy suggested seeing a real-world documentary on the Shueisha's publishing of Dragon Ball manga from the publisher's point of view. There are a lot of stories out there from Toriyama's point of view about how he wanted to end Dragon Ball, but his editors kept stopping him, kept making him change things and things like that. It'd be interesting to kind of see from the other side of things as somebody who was trying to control Toriyama, as somebody trying to guide him. Basically just the other side of that story. And I think that would really be an interesting documentary to kind of watch. Michael Hurt answered your question, Nick. He says the first game he remembers playing was on the Sega Genesis was Sonic 2, and actually being stuck in the second act of Chemical Plant Zone for weeks because he was a dumb kid who was just trying to figure out how to even play video games. Sonic 2 was a good one. Did you play the Sonic games, Nick?
I only actually grew up with the first one. Eventually, when I was, like, in my teens and an adult, played some of the other ones, particularly, like, borrowing one of my cousin's handheld systems to play the ones on there. Mm-hmm. But I never played any of the 3D Sonic ones, except, like, borrowing, like, Sonic Adventure 2 a couple of times.
I like Sonic Adventure 2, but I was mostly going to look at if you had a favorite of the original Sonic trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard great things that, you know, like, in particular, people really, really like the Sonic 2, but I only had the first one growing up, so not really one to judge.
Yeah, that's fair enough. A couple more here. Loon Ramayasha said, I'd love to see a cool fictional documentary looking back at the Kira phenomenon and the killing spree in Death Note. That's something that'd be made in universe, and I can imagine how sensationalist it would be considering now most documentaries about serial killers and strange phenomena are. It'd be interesting to see if a documentary on the Kira killings would know enough to actually know what the Death Note was and all the rules surrounding it, like if that was made any kind of public knowledge. But that would be pretty crazy to see.
And then at the end, it just gets to Matsuda, and he's like, and so then I just shot him.
Yeah, I shot him right like six times in the chest. Boom. What do you do now? I dance in a costume on the side of the road to tell people to do their taxes. Well, you know what? This makes sense. Jack Lebrano says, my joke answer for a documentary would be see one that covers the events of the Thousand Year Blood War arc just for the characters to describe with straight faces all the weird and random bullshit that happened throughout that war.
So then it turned out that Ishida wasn't actually...
So
not sure what he was actually doing. I don't know why he thought that he could, you know, just sneak around the paper explosives when there were two different people who could see everything he was doing.
So I managed to fight him, and then he turned into a laser chicken of some kind. That was unexpected. He says his real answer, though, would be a documentary on the wildlife in the gourmet world. It'd be interesting to see how such incredibly powerful creatures interact with one another without the presence of the gourmet hunters flying alongside them. It's like a nature documentary.
You just have Steve Irwin in there. Crikey!
Oh, I'm going to stick my thumb up this 17-story tall Tyrannosaurus's butthole. Like, I think
it's nature beautiful.
The last one here from Red Bane. I'm just going to read his verbatim. As an answer to your documentary question, riffing off your mention of Wiener, I'd like to see a documentary about Oda that never focuses on One Piece, but rather how his personality issues and bizarre workaholicisms are slowly destroying his marriage and alienating him from his children. After his marriage has failed and his wife has been awarded custody of his children, the final shot is just a short, wordless shot of Oda in his office, wistfully sketching the next scenes for his manga, then fade to black where you get the classic white text boss telling us how Oda is yet to reconcile with his family, but is punctuated with the latest sales figures for One Piece and how it is still the highest-selling manga in history.
That is so dark. The blackest comedy.
It's so dark.
I'm sure that Oda's relationship with his family is much better than that.
Yeah, he literally schedules time in for his family, Nick.
Oh, boy.
All right. So, hey, we got some great answers for you guys. Thank you very much for that. And I'll ask you guys now what our question for you is now. Guys, I want to know. I'm a big fan of music right now. Well, not in general. I've been a big fan of music. That seems weird to phrase it as to right now, but I've been listening to a lot of music recently, particularly because of WrestleMania. I've been listening to a lot of wrestling theme songs. I want to know, guys.
Like you just discovered a bunch of these newer guys.
Yeah.
Their themes. Sure.
So, guys, what theme song do you think best fits either characters in manga? Like, what song do you hear and you're instantly like, that's Toriko's theme song, or boom, that's, you know, and I don't mean like official theme songs. I mean, you're like, oh, Pat Benatar hit me with your best shot would be like, Yamcha or something like that. You could either do that, or alternatively, which theme song do you best represents either Nick or myself? So you could do it for a manga character or one that you think would best fit one of us. So if you got an idea for that, shoot it on over weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We'll read your answers next month.
Cool. Questions for each other then.
All right. Why don't you start, Nick?
All right. So last week I got to see Get Out.
Okay.
Movie that I'd been hearing a lot of great things about and finally got around to seeing it. It was wonderful. It was, I mean, like, I hate horror movies in general, and I love that movie. Not only did it meet some very high expectations that I had from the great reactions that people have been having to it, but it exceeded them. And I had been really kind of been trying to avoid people's discussions of it and spoilers and everything like that, and I felt a little bit like I was missing out, especially because people were like, oh man, it was so good, you have to see it, and I just, you know, wasn't. So glad for that reason as well that I got to see it. Mm-hmm. So coming off of that, my question for you is, what is the last time that you can remember, like, some sort of cultural phenomenon or something that everybody around you was talking about that you felt like you were really missing out on because, I don't know, maybe it was something that just didn't appeal to you or maybe you didn't had the time in order to get to see it or play it, if it was a game or anything like that. Like, I feel like I'm really missing out right now in Breath of the Wild because I don't have a Switch or a Wii U. Mm-hmm. So I can't play the game. So I feel like I'm missing out.
I could definitely see that. There are some out there that I willingly kind of, not willingly, but I know they're out there. Like, Rick and Morty is a huge thing. I know Mulan sauce at McDonald's. I don't quite understand it.
Chicken sauce and people would crazy over something, it. And it bumps Samurai Jack.
they apparently made a mention of it on the show and I didn't quite get, like, I never watched Rick and Morty. Like, I just didn't watch it. And now I continue to get people, like, talking about it. So it's one of those things where I'm just like, I sit there and say I could watch, I just don't have much of an interest. So I don't know if that one would count so much because I have the opportunity to join into it. I'm just kind of choosing not to in some way. They're definitely right now, you know what? Actually, here's a good one. Right now, I don't get Persona 5 at all. I've seen constant memes and shit being posted because I also follow like Great Black Otaku, Brennan Williams.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like he's constantly retweeting fucking Persona memes, and I just don't get them at all. Like, I just don't understand them. And it's one of those things where I only have a vague knowledge of what Persona even is, and I there's part of me, it's like, I want to join in so I know what they're talking about, but I've also played Atlas RPGs before, and they're all just long, grinding fucking pain. So, at the same time, I'm like, I want to know what you're talking about, but I just can't!
I mean, at least I understand selection screen memes.
I vaguely do, but I'm like, I don't understand what the context is, because what's the real version of it look like, essentially?
Okay, I can get that.
Yeah. All right, I got a question for you. This may be a very quick and short one, but this got posed to me. I was talking with a friend of mine recently, and she is an artist who essentially draws versions of herself and other people around her as though they're animals. I guess similar to what people call like fursonas or something like that. But I don't think specifically along those lines. Just the idea of being like, this person really reminds me of this type of animal and they draw this. They draw them as that, essentially. So I remember asking her at one time, what animal do you think I would be? Because she was a wolf and her friends were wolves. I was like, what was I? She's like, I don't know, like an otter. And I was like... I feel hurt.
That's an odd one. At least that's unique, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel hurt in one way, because I'm like, it's a fucking family of wolves, and I'm the otter over there, but I still am like, otters are dope now. Like, I love otters now, because I'm like, I am the otter!
What's that one gif, where, like, I think it's an otter. It might be I believe it's an otter, that's playing with the different size cups.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then someone captioned it with like, what the fuck is this? You give me a stack of cups and then you give me them in the wrong order? What the fuck is this? What's wrong with you? I can totally see you doing that. What the fuck's wrong with you? You give me these cups and what am I supposed to do with these cups?
I don't even know what these are supposed to do. I'm fucking these things.
Fuck you, Lisa. Or whoever.
Yeah. So, Nick, if you were to think you were any kind of animal, what do you think you would be?
The last time that someone posed anything like this, and I actually only remember this because you specifically mentioned the drawing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, Nicole goes through artistic streaks where she just, you know, feels like sketching stuff out, or she'll ask her friends, you know, to give her ideas for her to draw. And so, yeah, at one point she was like drawing actually exactly what you described as like, you know, people that she knew as animals. And this was around the time that we, like, this was early in the time that we were dating. And so she drew me as a tortoise.
You know what? For a moment, I thought you were about to say turkey, and I was like, I don't know how to take that.
Yeah,
when you said tortoise, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm sure she loves you in her own way.
Yeah, I'm like, maybe she really loves turkeys, Nick. Tortoise, I see absolutely for you. I could see that. Kind of, very calculating, but very strong. And
I'm also going to be around for 100 years, hopefully.
Yeah, you're gonna live long. I imagine turtles also don't like chocolate.
I hate being turned over on my back.
Oh, yeah. That happened once at MAGFest. I knocked you over, and you sat on your back. And like, guys, come on! Guys, come on! Not funny! Guys! Guys!
Oh, guys! Feed me fruit and insects now.
Guys, I want carrots. Huh. Anytime a little piece of lettuce gets near your mouth, I'm gonna stretch
my neck out for it.
Ah. Your neck just slowly extends forward and takes a bite, and then just extends.
Somebody backwards. Comes by that I don't like, and I sink to my clothing. but also, like, I've just always liked turtles because, you know, I grew up with Ninja Turtles and stuff.
So. Yeah, I could definitely see that. So we're a turtle and an otter.
Let's go into the ocean together and, I don't know.
Rule it!
I guess. I mean, when I think of tortoises and otters, I don't really think of them ruling. They're not exactly alpha predators.
I don't even know if we can live in the same climates together.
I'm not a zoologist.
What am I, some kind of animal expert? Some kind of animal man? I don't think so. Oh, shit! Emperor Dian has in the chat a new rare platformer. We're the Banjo-Kazooie and ukulele of this world. We're the,
my God.
We're the accordion bongo. Accordion like bongo.
Water-focused version of Banjo-Kazooie. Sweet.
Yes. I guess... Right. I guess you would have to be the banjo role. Well, I guess I would be the banjo role, because, I mean, you're the turtle. You're too slow. Like, I have to, like, you're more of, like, the Kazooie, like, I call upon you when you
I have the utilities, yeah.
And I guess because I actually have hands.
I sink into my shell, and you throw me like a boomerang.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I kick you around, and you're, like, in your shell, so you don't care.
Please stop.
And then there's like one where I just strap bombs to you and throw you at things, and you just hide in your shell, till one time I'm like, all right, don't have to worry about being in your shower or something. I'm like, hey, is that a nickel? You're like, what? Pop your head out, and then it explodes. You're like, ow!
I get in my shell, and you ride on me like a surfboard.
Oh, holy! I was just gonna say, I could, like, ride around on you like a skateboard everywhere.
Fucking shield surfing, Zelda. Oh, boy. All right.
Let's get to our questions,
then. Let's do it. We do have questions to get through. We're still 7 months behind, so let's get right into it. I think we're starting off with Satellite of Love's question.
Yeah, you want me to start?
Sure.
All right, cool. We got Dear Y, Ruler of Two Worlds, One Family, and She Seems to Have an Enrollable Touch, and they're both Phil Collins songs.
I don't
songs.
Know what that song is.
Invisible Touch! She invisible seems to touch. Have an invisible touch, and something, grabs my hold of your heart. It's not one of my favorite ones, but it's a good one. It's a jaunty one. You need those jaunty Phil Collins songs anyway. As a suggestion for your commentaries, have you guys considered making your Digimon commentaries separate from your regular movie commentaries? That way you have consistent monthly or bi-monthly Digimon streams alongside your regular movie stream. I'd also like to suggest Legend of Chun-Li for a commentary stream. Well, we'll keep the Legend of Chun-Li one in mind in the future. As for the Digimon one, I think we did have some discussion at one point on the idea of trying to find a way to make them more regular, but we kind of already do in terms of, like, every other month we usually do a Digimon commentary. Just because we have so much fun doing it, people seem to have a lot of fun listening to it.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something at one point in time we could make it so that would be its own separate thing, but as it is right now, I think we'll kind of keep it as is. Perhaps if we get, like, a longer list of movie commentaries we want to do.
More reliably do movie commentaries each month, yeah.
Yeah, then maybe it would be good. But as it is now, it's helpful to kind of have this out there. It's maybe something that'll pop up. We recently just hit our new Patreon goal, so we're at that, and there are new goals that are going to be planned in the future. So maybe some of those things are maybe...
We'll consider adding that one. I think that a bit of a barrier to it is that we need to also be able to consistently make time for two streams each month. But if we can get into that happen, then I think that that would be a potential goal to have. It is something that we have considered before. So.
Absolutely. And as for the question, has Asta ever made an influential, motivational impact on either of your lives? No.
I mean, in fairness, he's only been around like 2 years.
And in fairness, I don't think many Jump characters have made that much of a, like, emotional, motivational impact. I mean, fuck, it's not like, I don't think Luffy's ever done that for me, per se. I don't think, like, you know, I can't say Osamu, because Osamu has to a little bit. Like, there's characters that have, but it's not, you know, Deku, I don't think, has made a motivational, inspirational impact on my life.
I mean, you did put up that motivational phrase from World Trigger at work.
Oh, yeah, the training question that's probably still in my office and may never be taken down because no one actually realizes that's not a Japanese philosopher. It's a fucking manga character. That's what.
Who's going to look it up?
That's my one in over those guys.
All right. Next up from Jack Lebrano. Dear Nick Ruler of Rhymes and Chris Ruler of Bees. Beep, because beep. T rhymes with bees. Fucking tired. slight spoilers of one of my favorite aspects of the JoJo series is that after defeating Dio, for whatever reason, Jotaro decided to become a marine biologist. So out of all the characters you can think of from the manga series that have ended, or just finished manga in general, which character had the oddest job for you, as in a job that you never expected that said character to take by the end of the series, or even time skip? I have a couple of answers for this. Okay. One is the super obvious, Chad, why are you beating people up for money now? but the other is actually Digimon. Like, a lot of people have noted this about the conclusion of that series and how a bunch of the where they are now moments in the final flashback make no sense. For example, we had only just learned that Davis wanted to own a noodle cart, and then he becomes the, like, a world famous noodle cart shop guy who is, like, featured on the front of Time magazine for his line of noodle cart shops. And also, fucking Gabumon and Matt just become fucking astronauts to end up being the first people on Mars.
Wait, Gabumon became an astronaut with him?
Yeah, he had, like, his own special spacesuit with, like, a shape in the helmet for his horn.
Man, I need to watch the rest of Digimon, because I guess they're really, they had reached a point where Digimon were well-known in the world, and you could take them out of the digital world. I'm trying to contemplate the idea of them, like, being like, alright, so we're taking you on this dangerous mission to Mars. We don't have time to test how space affects Digimon, if in any way, but fuck it, just send the ice dinosaur up into space.
I mean, if you can track down the old Digimon's videos that Jake did back in the day, he paid special attention to that conclusion and how terrible it is, and went over and was like, okay, some of these make sense. I can see Kara being a teacher. Yeah, sure. Cody being a lawyer. Perfect. Why the fuck is Matt an astronaut?
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a weird one in there.
Just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that would fit that outside of it, but you basically kind of stole mine by talking about, Jotaro becoming a marine biologist. He's just suddenly like, I love the shit out of dolphins. It's like, okay.
I mean, I was also trying to think of, like, Naruto characters, but, you know, for the most part, it just sort of seemed as though the men kept on, you know, doing missions and shit and taking up high positions. You know, Sasuke goes on special missions, Naruto's Hokage, Shikamaru's his advisor. The women have babies.
Hey, and Ten-Ten opens a store no one goes to.
Ten-Ten opens, it's a weapons store, though, so yeah. You can't get it.
Yeah. Which has to feel like that entire character has also been like an in-universe joke in and of itself, essentially.
He just like puts out an advertising sign, buy useless weapons.
You know what works though about Matt and Digimon becoming a, astronaut?
What's that?
Is he's also a rock star. So I like to imagine that Matt basically chose his career path to just be Buckaroo Banzai, where he's like, he's like, I'm just a spaceman, astronaut, rock star, scientist. So I'm just awesome. That's basically what I am.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right. That's that one.
All right.
Another Jack LeBron one.
Yes. Dear Nick Asta is the new Bleach Freeman, and Chris is still trying to sleep Larios. To Chris, specifically, as Part 4 anime is ending next week, I wanted to get your opinion on a trend that is persisting since the JoJo series was officially translated. As you know, due to copyrights on many bands, singers, and song names that Araki used in his work, the translation team has always been given altered versions of stand names to avoid lawsuits and stuff. Like how Crazy Diamond becomes Shining Diamond, Killer Queen is Deadly Queen, Surface is Show Off, Echoes is Reverb, etc., etc. But out of all the censored and altered stand names in Part 4, even JoJo itself, which one did you get annoyed by the most? That's a good question. I have not finished part four yet. I'm still planning to get through it. I'm about halfway through the series, and I kind of just hit a point where I just hadn't had the time to watch it. Now I'm trying to get back into it. But of part four, the one that kind of stuck out to me the most, I know Surfish and Show Off is a big one because it focuses on a locker that says Surface on it before before Show Off comes out. But to me, the one that makes me laugh the most is Bad Company gets turned into Worse Company. But the reason it's so funny to me is because the character who has Bad Company as a stand has on his fucking collar Bad on one side and Co on the other. So he has his own fucking stand name on his neck, and it's just like, no, it's Worse Company. He just couldn't find letters for worse, I guess, in a store.
I mean, look, he couldn't find Bunny, so...
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if the hand got changed. I can't remember if that one did or not. But I think, yeah, I think Worst Company was probably the one that stuck out the most to me. But there's going to be a lot of them, because we haven't even gotten to, like, the biggest parts yet, where, like, the musical acts become more and more obtuse. So I'm really kind of curious to see what happens when they get to, like, part six, like Stone Ocean, and they have to deal with like the Made in Heaven stand or Stairway to Heaven stand or a fucking Diver Down or Foo Fighters or shit like that. Sex Pistols. Yeah, that's going to be another great one. So yeah, that's the one I
go. Like pistols, you know.
I try not to get too upset with them because I completely understand it. Like,
you're right.
It's not something that can be changed. Like, Arakai kind of wrote this not realizing that copyright would ever play into this. But in America, that shit doesn't fly, essentially, so it has to happen.
Out of all the naming convention changes from anime and manga that have happened, I think that would probably bother me the least. Like, I've always been really annoyed whenever, you know, like, whenever they're like, we need to make these names more English so that stupid American kids can say their names without getting confused.
You know what one still bothers me to this day? And it shouldn't bother me. And I realize part of the reason it bothers me is because I read Scanlations, and I think that's where it really got hammered in from. But is Mr. Two's style of Okama Kenpo. Right. So in the 4Kids dub, they called it Crazy Karate, which was like, that's dumb, but I kind of get it. Like, you're almost just trying to avoid the fact of, like, he's just a weirdo and not really play into, like, the whole Okama culture. Then... So the way it got translated by dub is later on in the manga is "Oh Come My Way Kenpo," and I don't know why, but I can't fucking stand it. I get so infuriated by that where I'm like, it's a really bad pun to just do Okama Kenpo. Why don't you just call it Okama at this point? I applaud the effort that went into making it, but I don't know why. There's just something about it that just instantly is just makes me like, I just have that Kermit the Frog face right afterwards, like, Grump.
All right.
But yeah. Good question.
All right. Let's go on to questions by Kenny Barnes, Dear Chris, Champion Red Larios, and Nick, Comic Hot Milk Freeman.
I like this one. This one has me as, like, the cool person, and you're the joke no one gets.
Number one, have you ever played any of the Shonen Jump fighting games, such as Jump Superstars, Ultimate Stars, J-Stars, and if so, what series did you feel was underrepresented or completely left out of the games, such as Pretty Face, Zombie Powder, Hikaru no Go, After Superstars, etc.? And what are some of your favorite dream teams from them?
I did.
Only one of those games that I played was it was a PS3 game. Oh gosh, this would have been a few years ago. Skitch and I played it at a convention a few years ago, and I can't remember what the hell the name of it actually was. He played, I think, as Jotaro for a lot of it, and I would flip around between a few different characters. And I was impressed by the effect that they, like, included, like, Chizuge was, like, an assist character and stuff. Just about every character, every, like, important series you could think of was featured in there. In terms of, like, including Zombie Powder, like, that, I don't think that series really lasted long enough to really, like, it's not one of the series that I think of when I think important Shonen Jump series through history. It's like, I think that's okay that it was left out, honestly.
Yeah, I could definitely kind of see that.
Pretty Face, Pretty Face was terrible too.
I was gonna say, did the main character in Pretty Face even really fight? J-Star's Victory Versus is what people are saying, which I think was that. I think the only one I ever played, and I feel bad for this because it was a ROM. I played it on a ROM, which is a bad thing to do, but I don't think this ever got a US release actually, was Jump Superstars, which was the DS version, essentially of like the big jump mashup game. And it was kind of neat that you had like the second screen was your coma screen. So you had different comas of different sizes and like some were battle characters that would take like 4 to 7 squares or something like that. And then you had like support ones, which were like 2 to 3 squares and you could tap on them and they'd like appear in the game for hot moment and attack. Or there were like just one square ones that would just give you like a boost or something like that. I remember being sad that the JoJo characters were kind of underrepresented in the game, because I think the only ones you could play were Jotaro and Dio. Although Josuke was a battle one, or a support one, which I used the crap out of. He would just like punch forward and then heal you at the same time. I was like, this is awesome! I think for that one, I used to play a lot of like, it was a lot of like Luffy, Jotaro, and I'm trying to remember who else would have been in there. It may have been like Vegeta or something like that. It may have been a Dragon Ball character. But I think like Yugi was actually a character in that you could play. And like Ice Shield 21 was in there. And Rurouni Kenshin. Maybe I played Sano if Sano was in there too. From Rurouni Kenshin. But it was a really fun game actually. I remember liking that a lot.
Okay, number two. I'm not sure if you've ever seen 1 Minute Melee. Think Death Battle but without the Deadliest Warrior bullshit. But after the last 10 seconds of the fight between Kenshiro and Jotaro, the big aura 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 versus ta-ta-ta-ta moment, it looked as if Jotaro unleashed Zawarudo in the last possible second to finish him off. I may be a huge Fist of the North Star fan, but even I would agree that while Kenshiro's Musou Tensei makes him achieve insane speeds and reflexes, it wouldn't prevent him from falling under the effect of Star Platinum's The World, which you can already guess what that does. Do you guys agree that Jojo would totally kick Ken's ass if they ever fought? I haven't read or watched enough of Hokuto no Ken to really answer that question, honestly. So, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know for certain. This is actually, this is a question that kind of came up in a chat I was in with Infamous Planet and a couple other people the other day. He was asking me what people could essentially beat the world and beat Dio. And, like, trying to, like, logically think of that, it's hard to actually know what will and wouldn't be able to operate within Dio's The World Stand when it activates. Because Jotaro was able to do it because apparently it became part of Star Platinum's power to also be able to do that. But I don't know if for, say, somebody who doesn't have stands, like they have their own powers, if they're able to, like, activate it in that world or not. Like, it's just kind of like that weird logic when you take two out-of-universe characters and you start having to try to apply, like, all right, well, how would these mechanics actually work with one another?
Right.
Like, it's one of those things, if you have a Devil Fruit user fighting against somebody from a not-One Piece world, is there some, like, equivalent to Sea Stone that exists in that world? Or are people like the Lugia users just unbeatable if you don't have their element to counter them or whatever, you know? Just one of those weird kind of things that exists. So, to answer your question, I don't think so, but I don't know how you mechanically say the Musou Tensei works. I don't know how you'd apply it. Like, if his speed and reaction's that good, maybe he would. I don't know.
Number three, how many Bleach games have you played? Who do you main, and would you be willing to live stream any of them? I mean, we have given some thought to potentially doing, like, some form of Let's Plays, I guess. And I guess that we could take Bleach games into consideration for that. The only Bleach game I can remember playing at all, like, full-on Bleach game as opposed to, like, a crossover game, has been, like, Flash games online. I've never played any of the, like, I know there's the mobile one that's fairly popular right now. I don't play that at all, and I never bought any of the, like, fighting games for PSP and all that stuff ever.
I bought, I think it was the Blade of Fate? It wasn't that one. That was a 4-player one. I know I played one of the DS ones. It doesn't look like any of the ones I see, but it must have been. It was Blade of Fate, which was like, you were able to get like 4-player fights. But it was just a pure fighting game, and I think I played a lot of Kumamura at that time, because it came out during like the Soul Society arc. So there were only like five characters who actually had Bankai. It was like you, it was like Kubamura, Mayuri, Byakuya, Renji, and Ichigo, essentially. Like there wasn't like nobody else really had them. So it was cool having Kubamura because you could just, you could, like, his sword would just hang out on the other side of the screen, like the giant one. You just hit a button, it would like cleave across the screen. You're like, this is awesome! Finally, Kubamura is good! as for, I mean, I wouldn't know how to even live stream it. One, I guess you could emulate that, but just in general of Bleach ones, I don't think Bleach has any games on like Steam or anything like that. I don't, like, do they get PC releases at all? I'm absolutely open to playing them and streaming them. I just don't think I've ever seen a Bleach game on like a computer. I didn't know if they still even made Bleach games, essentially. So I guess
it's been a while since the last like big Bleach game, because you know the popularity of the series dropped around the time that the anime ended. So
yeah, like I know Naruto still has games that come out. Like I think they just released a new Naruto game relatively recently or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like I recognize that they're out there. I know One Piece just had a new game that came out not too long ago too, but I haven't seen a Bleach one in a while. So if it's possible to access them and live stream them, absolutely, I would love to do that. But other than that, yeah, I don't know how to do it.
Number four, there was an infamous pick from the heyday of demotivational posters with the caption, "Woman, know your place," with an out-of-context screen cap of Ichigo angrily pointing at Rukia with the now immortal line, "From here on out, all your opinions are rejected." Would you be so kind as to explain the context of that image? I refuse to attach it because, honestly, old memes are old. I believe that that is from when Ichigo is rescuing Rukia, and she is telling him to just leave him and let her die, and he's like, "No, all your opinions are rejected. I'm going to save you." Mm-hmm. So, number five, do you guys think that the most worthwhile thing that Orihime ever did was to be partially responsible for the leak spin meme? Can you explain the context for the particular scene with Orihime spinning that leak around?
The context
of it was that it was one of her early appearances where she was being an airhead and she just kind of happened to run into Ichigo, and she explained that she had gone to the store to get some ingredients for some weird recipe she was working on, and then she was spinning a leak around while she was explaining it.
Yeah, I don't think there was actually much context, like necessary context. She had a leak and was talking about it, and she happened to spin it in a comical manner.
So people put, you know, that one weird Scandinavian song over it, and
next question.
Anyway. Number six, why aren't there any Bleach/Zombie Powder crossover fan art fanfics doujins out there? Nobody has the right mind to see Ichigo, Zangetsu, and Gamma's chainsaw sword clash, or Orihime and Yorichi huddled in the corner in shame for being out-boobied by Wolfina? Yeah, I guess not.
First and foremost, I'd have to imagine there are hundreds of those. I didn't think that shit existed until Brennan used to tell me how it used to be a big deal in the Naruto God of War crossover community, and I was like, wait, there's a whole community of you guys?
Naruto God of War crossover community?
Yeah, there's crossover communities for all this shit, so I guarantee there's somewhere out there there's a lot of Bleach Zombie Power crossover stuff.
I remember very specifically back when I would was more heavily participate in RPs. There was this one that somebody linked us. There was this live journal community that someone had established seeking players for a Kingdom Hearts BioShock crossover RPG.
Oh man, that the immediate nerd in me was like, that sounds awesome, until I start thinking the mechanics. I'm like, there's so much moral gray in the BioShock universe that you have to, like, you can't just, like, blast away by just being like, and Kingdom Hearts is light, and opening up all the doors, all the layers of racism you can't just, like, knock out of people like they're heartless. Oh, man, no, there's no way those would blend. All
what
right.
are you doing? What are you doing with that wrench? I'm freeing him!
A slave obeys! Yeah, his last question then is about a Hitsugaya thing. I downloaded the image and it just says, I guess the screen cap from one of the animes.
Some sort of fan.
Yeah, shit upon your frozen heavens, Yorimaru. I imagine it's just a bad fan sub of some kind. I mean, it could be official sub, I don't know.
Look, dude, Chris, fan subs, you know, they release them for free and they're just as high quality as the official
Like that, like that one we saw of Dragon Ball where it was just like they forgot to animate the rest of the words, so it was just a fucking like code of HTML text where I guess the new special text was supposed to show up. Great times. All right.
Oh man.
Next question here. Let's from Andre Golden, who says, "Dear Y Ruler of A New Hope and the Phantom Menace T, I have Star Wars on the mind and Star Wars questions for you, which is a good thing. Cool. The Star Wars new trailer just came out. Well, teaser, but yeah whatever. Yeah. Question one, who is your favorite Sith Lord?"
I really had to think about this when I first saw this because, I mean, I haven't read a lot of the expanded universe, and there's a question just after this, which is, have you watched the Clone Wars and or Rebels? And, no, I haven't. So if there are any, like, others than the ones that appear in the movies and Asajj Ventress, then I don't really know anything about them. So I'm going to go with the answer that I decided on when I was, like, 9, which is Darth Maul.
Okay.
It's a purely Boba Fett answer. He, you know, I was a kid, he looked cool, he had a double lightsaber.
That's all you need. He worked. I don't know why. I guess it's that same thing of like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm excited for a Boba Fett movie because I don't know if you can, like, you may just make him look lamer. I have that same thing with Darth Maul where it's like, oh, wait, technically it's in canon that Darth Maul's still out there in the universe as a half spider monster. He's a spider monster now or something. I have played, a couple of the Star Wars games. So I think it actually might come from those. I played KOTOR, and SWTOR for a good deal. I might say Darth Nihilus was kind of cool until like he goes down like a bitch. I might go with Darth Sion, which was sort of weird. He was essentially like a zombie looking dude. Like he was like a gray skinned guy just covered in giant like Frankenstein kind of scars. And he essentially was immortal because he just kept feeding off the force and his anger for every time he died. He'd get so angry he'd come back. So, like, the final boss battle you had against him, you had to kill him, like, 12 times. And just kept beating him over and over again until he just realized how hopeless it was to continue trying to fight against you and gives up. But he was a pretty intimidating boss. You, like, have to encounter him, like, halfway through the game when you're not prepared, and it's terrifying. So I always like
that's like if you fought against the Hulk and he eventually just stopped coming at you because he got depressed.
Yeah, I may be forgetting some of the exact details as to how it ends, but yeah, I mean like Darth Sion just kept coming back, and you just had to keep killing him over and over again. It's pretty brutal, but I liked a lot of the ones you got in the SWTOR and KOTOR universe. I liked a lot of those side ones because they were able to add very unique aspects to them. Like Darth Nihilus was just this void of the Force essentially, who just existed to sit around there and, like, drain the force around him and like, annihilate everything. And it was such a cool name, Darth Nihilus.
I am Darth Nihilus. I don't believe in anything.
I don't believe in nothing. So I liked him a lot. Two, have you watched the Clone Wars and or Rebels? Nick answered that. I have not seen Rebels. I watched the first season of Clone Wars, and I intend to watch more. I've gotten distracted with, like, a couple other things, so it's definitely in my docket to go back and catch up on Rebels and watch it. I liked Rebels from what I saw. It was definitely nice to see a Star Wars cartoon or like show that kind of dealt with like the real, the real aspect of war, but it actually touched upon the aspect of a war in it, you know, about casualties being had, about loss, soldiers being sacrificed. Even start to touch on like the notion that clones realize they're just clones and that ultimately their lives are pretty meaningless. There's some heavy themes to it.
I was thrown off of watching them because I saw the Clone Wars movie. It was terrible.
The Clone Wars movie isn't great, and I had an entire discussion with this with my brother on a podcast recently where I was like, I don't get why the droids in Clone Wars, why they programmed them to be stupid and cowardly. Like, they're programmed to scream and run away if their lives are in danger. Why would you, they're robots, why would you program that into them? Why wouldn't you program them to just be, like, not aware of their, like, they shouldn't be aware they have mortality. They don't have mortality, by the way. You could just rebuild it. But yeah, there's some weird aspects, but there are some good ones. Question three, who is your favorite droid? That is a stupid question. There is no other answer but HK-47. He is the best. He is always going to be the best. He is,
He's got some great lines, but I've never played those games, so.
He is the character that made Bioshock characters to me. He's the guy who you look at and you're like, this is what made Bioshock as great as it was. I realize they had the Baldur's Gate games before and everything like that, but he is like the character for them, for me. Where I'm just like, God, I fucking love HK-47. Just his constant, like, the fact that he was programmed to be sinister, but the programming is so sinister that it sometimes works against itself, like, veiled threat. Oh, sir, you shouldn't do that. I might have to be sad. Like, it's just like, why is veiled threat one of your terms? For those of you who don't get that, by the way, like, the way HK-47 talked is he'd always, like, state what he was doing before actually talking. So he'd be like, query, master, where are we going today? Observation, it sure is a hot one. And then it'd just be ones like, veiled threat, master, you shouldn't do that. Like, why is there the option for you to reveal your sinister machinations?
Oh, boy.
And finally, who is your favorite evil group? The Separatist Alliance, the Empire, the First Order? I guess the Empire.
Yeah. You gotta go with the Empire. The Separatists are fucking pathetic.
They are just embarrassing. And the First Order is just the Empire minus Vader, essentially, so.
Right.
Yeah, I'll probably go with that one.
Okay. We've got some more questions then from Andre Golden right after that. It's the worst power question. Dear Y, the ruler of Inside Out, and the good dinosaur T. Brother and I usually joke about lame powers and pick the one that sounds the worst, and he doesn't really flat out say it, but I guess he wants us to pick which is the worst one of these. Number one, turning into a 10-year-old girl and waiting an hour to turn back. Number two, the power to turn honey mustard into ketchup. Number three, the power to turn your hair pink.
Which one's the worst, or which one?
Out of those three.
Because I was saying, if it was one that would work the best, I'd assume it'd be, and this is just cheapskating me, turning into a 10-year-old girl and wait an hour to turn back. Like, buy your movie tickets when you're a 10-year-old girl. Order your food when you're a 10-year-old girl. And you get discounted costs on everything. And then you pop back and you're like, hey, I'm a grown-ass dude. I'm eating this food for a discount. And they're like, I can just charge you more later. Like, no, I'm a little girl again. Stop. I think the worst one would be turning honey mustard into ketchup. There's never a situation where I'm going to say, like, man, I really wish I had ketchup for this and not honey mustard.
Yeah, I think that even if you have something that you would normally want to have ketchup for, that honey mustard would at least be serviceable for it, so.
Yeah, there's really, it's not like it's, you know, like a complete, it's not like it's Thousand Island dressing or something like that. Like, generally, honey mustard and ketchup are pretty similar of what they go on.
If you turn your hair pink, can you turn it back?
I have to assume so. Otherwise, it's a one-time power to do it. That seems pretty...
Yeah, it would just turn pink once. If it literally is just like your hair color just turns pink permanently, that's like, oh, that is kind of lame. At least with the power to turn honey mustard into ketchup, you can control the amounts that you turn into ketchup.
Oh, I could get like a bunch of stoned friends over and just be like, look, I'm a magician. Boom, honey mustard's ketchup now.
Right. You know.
But if I can't keep doing that if my hair is just always going to be pink now.
So if it is your hair just turns pink permanently, then I think that would be the worst power because you would have the least control over it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah, I think it's just honey mustard into ketchup because it would have the least utility.
All right. Questions here from Lucky Swordsman. Dear Nick, why me Scrooged, and Chris, offer to my heart and backdoor part T. It's February, right? Ha ha ha. How cute. Anyway, since it's the month of love, regardless of what month it is, I have some very romantic questions for you. What manga would you
And an odd pizza eye with a blah pizza pie, that's amore.
Lyrics.
What manga would you show your partner to see if the person was a keeper or not? What would be deal-breaking? Not liking One Piece came to mind. Well, my last longtime partner hated One Piece and was not a fan of it. And here's the thing.
You're not together anymore.
Yeah, I know. Like, and I said, "Kit the road, bitch." And I'm like, oh, I hope she's not listening now. No, there was a point in time where we were talking about, like, moving in together. And part of it was she's like, you know, you have to find some place to put your manga and everything like that. Like, there's not going to be a whole place. Like, because at the time I had, like, several collections of it. And I was like, yeah, I'd probably sell most of it. But the one I'd really like to keep is One Piece. She's like, yeah, that's fine. But I might tell you to, like, put it in a closet or something so I don't look at it. I was like, oh, my heart. It was half joking on her part, but, yeah, like, I don't know if I need my partner to like manga. If it was meant to be like, this is a way to show if our tastes are compatible in any way, I think I'd almost need like three different series then to offer just to like see if one of these hits your taste at all. But honestly, I really don't, I try not to force manga down like people's throats if it's not something they say they enjoy. Like if they specifically are like, I don't like anime or manga per se, I don't really try to force it too much. There may just be some that I'd be like, maybe you'd like this. Death Note, I guess, is maybe the closest I can think of to an answer. But even that, I still wouldn't say, like, if you don't like Death Note, you don't like me.
Manga and, in general, things that you read, I find to be very personal things. So I basically just, like, leave that to people to decide on their own. If somebody doesn't like reading a series, then it's like, okay, I can still read it. It literally does not affect my ability to read it in the slightest because I'm always going to just read it on my own. The thing that I've found to be a little bit more important in my relationship with Nicole is our ability to watch things together. And we do a lot of stuff where we share stuff that we've liked in the past. And, it, you know, we do just accept, like, oh, okay, you don't like this as much as me. I won't make you watch it anymore. She has tried several times to get me to watch Rick and Morty, and every time I've been like, no, fuck that show. She's like, okay. But it took her a while to convince me to watch Steven Universe with her. And now we watch, you know, every single time an episode comes out, we watch it together. Let me explain that one, because it's a fine enough show. The first episode of Steven Universe that I happened to catch was one where his body turns into cats. He doesn't turn into a cat, he turns into multiple cats. Like, he parts of his body turn to cats and, like, crawl away from him.
Huh.
It was very freaky.
okay.
So I was like, what's wrong with the people who made the show? I never want to watch it again. And for, like, 2 years after that, we didn't watch it. So that's a little bit of a very roundabout way of me just saying, like, I don't really care if she does or doesn't like the stuff that I read. She, you know, just accepts that I like stuff, and I accept that she doesn't like stuff, or I accept that she likes something I don't. Like, if she came to me one day and was like, Nick, I love Friends of Tennis. It's the best. I'd be like, okay.
I don't know. I might have some trouble.
I have to read it still.
I might have some trouble if a significant other came to me as like, I love Air Gear. I love it. I'm like, why? Well, what's wrong with you?
That speaks to like sexual fetishes and stuff. But at least with Prince of Tennis, it's just like, okay, you like sweaty boys hitting a ball back and forth at each other. Like, I understand that, I guess.
Yeah. You can ultimately separate what you have to enjoy. I would not consider One Piece to be so dominating of an aspect of my life that my significant other not enjoying it would be a deal breaker for me. It's not as though I'm like, One Piece is like my family. If you don't enjoy my family, I don't know if this relationship's gonna work long term. It's like, if you don't know how to talk, if you can't deal with me at my Usopp, you don't deserve me at my Sanji, goddammit. Favorite love scene in a manga that comes to mind. It could be a kiss, confession, etc. I don't know if this is going to count, but I'm going to say it, and who cares? It's the answer you're going to get. I really always loved the scene I Shall 21 during the Death March when
Haruma
has been basically commanding the whole thing, and Mori has been following along, helping, and she's like kind of like everyone else has been patched up, and Haruma's like busy typing on a laptop, like. She comes up and starts working on his knee, and he says, what the fuck are you doing? I don't, like, go help everybody else. And she just says, they're all been taken care of, and just, he's like, well, fuck off then. She just says nothing, but she just keeps diligently working on it, and he doesn't, like, force her to leave or anything like that. And that's that first sign that goes to show that there's gonna be something there between them. Like, it goes to show that she has a lot of feelings towards him, and that she cares about his well-being, that even though he won't say he's hurting or anything like that, she sees it and is willing to help him. It's a very romantic kind of gesture.
And then at the very end of the Death March, when everyone goes into the hotel, like, Hiruma's still bossing people around, and Suzuna's like, wow, I can't believe that he's still got all that energy at the end of it. And Mori's like, yeah. And it cuts to Hiruma, you know, collapsed and dead.
Well, yeah, someone says, oh, we should go get Hiruma. And I think it's Mori specifically says, let him have his, like, I think he's busy right now or something like that.
Yeah, he's busy with something. She doesn't say he's tired. She's like, yeah, leave him alone. You know, yeah. I'll just be annoyed with you or something.
And yeah, it closes inside and he's just collapsed on his bed. that's that beauty of Inagaki's writing, where he manages to create somebody who's such a character, but then eventually starts to break down and show the real humanity of them. That's kind of that amazing reward that came with that series.
We're going to, like, eventually get to reach a point with, like, Senku, where you're just like, oh, I give him stuff, I feel so bad for it, or something like that.
I legitimately think there's going to be a point where, like, we realize just how much the weight of being the smartest person in this world kind this of is away in him.
This is why he believes 1,000,000,000% in stuff.
Yeah.
I have my own answer.
Yes.
Busa Rankin. Watsuki has this habit of giving his protagonists, they get married and live fucking happily ever after, fuck you, I'm going to do this for my characters, for a bunch of the series that he does. And Busa Rankin was no exception. Basically what happens is, oh gosh, what is the main character's fucking name in that series? I remember that the girl is Tokiko, and I think it's what, Kabuki. Hang on, let me look this up real quick so I actually get his fucking name right. Basically, the main character, at the very end of the series, ends up going onto the fucking moon to fight the final boss.
Kazuki Muto?
Kazuki, yeah. And so he's stranded there, and so for months, there's, like, fighting that's still going on Earth, between, like, you know, the main villain of the series and, Tokiko, working with a group of, people. To stop his plot. And then it turns out, that Papillon, the villain, has actually been devising this way for him to go and retrieve, Kazuki from the moon. Because although he's rivals with him, he also respects him and wants him to get him back. So they, Tokiko flies up off into space with a bunch of people and using a bunch of these different devices to essentially form a space traversing mecha suit. And, they essentially pull off the conclusion of The Martian, but a few years before that came out, where, you know, Kazuki blasts off from the moon, and, Tokiko goes out from their ship in order to meet him halfway between the two, and they end up hugging in the middle of fucking space, and they're reunited together, and they get to be together.
Aww.
It's, yeah. It's really sweet. There's a bunch of, like, just, all of the romance between them comes at the very end of that series because it kind of had to be rushed to its conclusion because it was canceled. So it was like, all right, I'm just going to like put this entire relationship they have into like 5 chapters. So it's like one ridiculously sweet moment that they have after another. There's like an epilogue point where, Kazuki gets interested in her scar and he asks if he can touch it. And, yeah,
Giggity.
All sorts of stuff like that. Well, it's a facial scar.
Giggity. Can I touch it? Let's move on to the last one here. Marriages and weddings are not often a part of the plot in shonen manga, and if they are, they tend to be a political scheme. As a natural bookend, the notable exception being Shaman King, where the protagonist is engaged the entire time of his own will and practically living a married life with his bossy wife, love, trust, sex, and everything. My question now, what kind of marriage or wedding do you want to see in the series you read? What series could benefit from this? What series couldn't handle this? And how would that be done?
I think it kind of has to be done the way that Shaman King did it, where it's an aspect of the protagonist's life, but it's not the focus of the series. Because if you make it the focus of the story, then everything's got to be built around it, and there's got to be complications to it. There's got to be a constant question of where this is headed. So in order to have a more normal relationship, you have to have it not be the crux of the story, because then it gets complicated by like a mystery and a tension. If you wanted to have, you know, like a kind of Peter Parker and Mary Jane thing, then you can't have the focus of the story be Peter Parker and Mary Jane, because then Mephisto will come along and fuck everything up and make everyone angry for years to come afterwards.
Yes. I think you can do it in some way also like Toriko kind of did it, where if romance isn't the focal point of your story and you still want this to be a story about the adventure, if you do a time skip, you can kind of just note that the character realizes like, hey, I'm going to get married. We're going to get married in the future. But hey, that's not what the story is going to be about. So it'll be off on the side. Hopefully you could maybe add a little bit more romantic flavor into it than Toriko did, where Toriko
was
almost
like,
sure,
we'll get married,
why not? Yeah, he's like, yeah, why not? Totes my goats, that sounds great. But just the notion that if you don't want to have it be the focus point of your story, or anything like that, if you do it on the side and just kind of deal with it as something that comes about, it's kind of always tough that to kind of handle those things in jump stories, since a lot of the time the protagonists tend to be on the younger side of things and are usually not as confident in their feelings or things like that. Or you could just do it that characters are already married and are dealing with married life, but maybe aren't the main character. I think it's hard to do that as a main character, but like a side character. Like if they're like, hey, Zoro's had a wife this entire time, I'd be like, huh, that's weird. She hasn't cared where you've been. They're like, no, they have an unspoken bond that their sword duels will always come first, that they can do whatever they want. So, like somewhere out there, she's battling a bunch of other people or something like that. Like it would work. It would be a little bit clumsy, but just that notion of if you just add it into an element of your story and just try to make it feel as natural as possible without trying to ham-fist it. You know, you just have to avoid the usual shonen way of handling romance of like the gulp, I don't know if I like her.
Zoinks.
Oh god, doogly.
I could buy Jinbei being married.
Yeah, that would absolutely make sense if he was just like, this is my wife, and like she shows up at a scene. Like, wow, hey, good for you.
Yeah. Alright, next is from Jack Lebrano. Dear Strong Nick and Chris Bat, question one, how do you read manga with boxing gloves on your hands? Oh, you think you're so clever. Oh, nobody has ever asked this question before. How do you read manga with boxing gloves on? Well, in order to answer that question, I'll just have to delete it! Okay.
I'm glad you could remember it exactly, verbatim.
I'm pretty sure that's not verbatim, but...
Well, close enough for me.
I did used to be able to... I think that I could still do this, recite the entire Awesome Cross promo that it's like essentially the question is, Strong Bad, I'm pretty sure that you would have a great voice for Monster Truck commercials, so he does a Monster Truck commercial essentially. I think I could do it, but I won't waste everyone's time doing it. I'm pretty sure I've already done this on a stream before, so. Next question. Seeing that Nick has fully read 3 and hopefully more parts of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I think it's time to bring up this particular JoJo-related question. There are rumors that Araki has plans to make Part 9 after JoJo Line is concluded, and seeing that JoJo's settings, locations, and overall story structure change so much from part to part, from Bram Stoker's Fist of the North Star to Jotaro and Friends' Wacky Vacation through the Middle East, which means that the next part could literally be anything, so I ask you both, what would you want the next part to be about, and what kind of weirdness would you toss into it? So, I'm still hesitant to answer this question because I feel as though if I answer something that is possible, that it will be in one of the other parts.
Well, to be fair, most of the other parts aren't really spoilers to explain what they are. Like, part 4 is essentially a murder mystery. Like, it's a town murder mystery sort of thing. Part 5 is about mobsters. Part 6 is a great escape. Like, it's a prison series about escaping from a prison.
Oh, cool.
Part 7 is a horse race. And, like, a cross-country horse.
See, that's the
race.
Thing. I was going to bring up potentially a race type of element.
Yeah, part 7 is a horse race. And part 8 is, from what I remember, much like part 4, but a lot less of, like, the murder part. It's just a very big mystery kind of series. Like, weird events have happened that they're trying to find the crux of them. Now, I didn't read enough of it to find it might have changed since then, but those are the ones I kind of got into. You know what I would kind of like to see a little bit, and this is maybe just me being indulgent, I would kind of almost like to see, like, a slice of life school series. Like, they've kind of had a little bit in that in part 4, but just the idea of not, like, building to this, like, I don't know, I guess it is just part 4, honestly. I was thinking of the idea of, like, a school series where all the characters are, like, all the classmates are stand users and things like that, but that was, by and large, the start of part 4. I could do, like, The Wire, but with stands. That'd be really indulgent. Because it's usually, he doesn't go too far into, like he wouldn't do anything, like, space-related, I don't think, because it would be too far out of, like, the comfort zone. Or not the comfort zone, but too far out of, like there needs to be something grounding for the series, but... I don't know, maybe that's the closest I can kind of think of. Maybe one set in a hospital? Like maybe like a medical drama? I don't know. I really don't know. Lost but withstands. I'd love that, but I don't, I think that's what part eight basically is. I don't know. I'm at a loss.
All right.
All right. Next question here. Kenny Varnes has a couple here. Dare Nick Chris Cage. Got it. All right. Number one, would you guys ever be interested in a possible Air Gear Abridged series possibly made by the guys behind SAO Abridged? I'm assuming it's Sword Art Online's Abridged?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Maybe.
Now, is this asking us if we'd like to make one or if we'd like to watch one made by the guys?
Watch one made by somebody else, particularly the guys behind Sword Art Online.
Okay.
I guess.
I'm a little confused.
I might check it out.
I feel like I'm about to be offensive here, but I can't. Are the guys from Sword Art Abridged like huge deals or something? Like, I'm saying
it's
this
a pretty,
in a
it's a pretty, it's a pretty big one.
Okay. I'm always saying this in a sense I haven't heard of it before. I'm also not big in the abridging community. I know Little Karibo from the fact that I watched it originally and have met him, and I know the guys from Team 4-Star personally, so I know that one. I just don't know other, like, abridgers per se, so I didn't know.
Well, to give you an idea, like, one or potentially, all right, maybe both of the guys behind Sora Online were some of the judges in the TIBA thing that Team 4-Star held.
Okay.
So that, you know, there were some guys from DBZ Bridge, obviously, and then some guys from there, and I think that then one other series, and then Lil Karibo were the judges. So a fairly big deal, basically.
Gotcha. And I want to stress that was not me trying to insult them or anything like that. I was just trying to understand if there was like an aspect to this question I was missing because I didn't know who the Sword Art Abridged guys were. They're like, don't you guys know they're your parents? I'm like, what?
What?
Mom's been making a bridge series? Whoa. Yeah, I mean, if it was the idea of doing one, Air Gear is one of those weird series though, because even though it had an anime, the anime didn't run that long. Like, it has to stop in the, like, basically right after they meet Yoshitsune, so you really wouldn't be able to talk about most of the stuff that happens in it. It'd be like Gantz Abridged, where even though I loved Gantz Abridged, it doesn't get to talk about the, like, biggest parts of that series because it ended before they happened. Two, have you ever watched the JoJo Abridged series made by future Team 4-Star member Antfish from 2008 with such memorable moments as Pita Man, Jotaro's penchant for fajitas, and Polnareff as voiced by someone impersonating Jeff Bennett doing a French accent? Yes, I have.
Okay.
I think that's actually how... I'm forgetting the chicken or the egg here. I think I may have seen Gantz Abridged because he was also the guy who did Gantz Abridged. I think I may have seen JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Abridged and I watched Gantz Abridged because of that. Or I watched Gantz Abridged and then saw he did JoJo. I was like, I definitely need to see that. So it was one or the other there, but I can't remember which one. I remember more of the jokes from Gantz Abridged, honestly. Like, if you've ever heard me call someone Dude Ball, that entirely is just a joke from Gantz Abridged that no one understands and I've just made part of my vernacular.
Okay.
Speaking of JoJo.
A little bit of insight into the creation of Chris here.
Yeah. Speaking of JoJo, Antfish has made a couple of videos. People are saying Gantz Abridged was someone else. Then I have no idea what I'm talking about here, and I'm just
who knows.
But I'll tell you, that's where Dude Ball came from. Anyway, speaking of JoJo, Antfish made a couple of videos abridging various scenes from the manga that weren't adapted into the anime at the time. Out of all the series you read, including the ones that have not been covered yet on WMR that were never given a proper anime, which ones would you like to see get the abridged treatment? And the person brings up the plus animo with the bear god thing. I at some point I'm gonna have to fucking read this again to remember if this is a big deal or not.
So a manga not adapted into an anime, also getting an abridged series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hesitant to name some things because they might have anime adaptations that I just haven't heard of. So because I very nearly said Freezing would probably make a hilarious one. And I was like, no, wait, I think that did get an anime. Shit. Oh, that, anything.
Oh, no. I don't know.
Spider-Man manga, I'm sure that hasn't gotten an anime. I'm sure that would make for a hilarious Abridged series.
Yeah, that one could definitely work.
Oh, man, I killed him too! Fuck!
Did Aki Sora have an anime?
Probably.
I'm trying to think of how you
it's
could.
It's a hentai. I think
there's
so.
There's definitely a way I feel like you could reflavor that into something better, but maybe.
Hang on a second. Akisora. Hang on. Let me look
anime. No boobs.
Yep. Yep. They also got an anime. Yep. Of course it did.
Fair enough.
Three episodes. Three episode OVA. Yeah.
That makes sense. Question four. New Japan or All Japan?
I've never seen any All Japan. There are some New Japan events that I have watched that I think are really great. In particular, I watched quite a few events last year when I was watching The Rise of Kenny Omega.
I have no idea what either of those really are, so.
They're Japan's wrestling organizations, so.
Yeah. Favorite incarnation of Tiger Mask? All of them. Why do we have to play favorites, guys? Come on.
Well, I know that one of them, didn't really stick with it very long. Like, the fifth Tiger Mask apparently wrestled for, a year or something like that. His Wikipedia article was not very informative, let me put it that way. The only one that I've actually seen wrestle, I didn't even watch his Tiger Mask matches, is Tiger Mask W. He's played by Kota Ibushi, who was in the Cruiserweight Classic last year. He is an amazing wrestler.
All right. And six, if Goku fought Kenshiro and Ken powered up all the way to his final form, Musou Tensai, how much power would Goku have to hold back in order to make sure Ken can have a fair fight with him and not get horribly one-shotted?
I'm going to go with the interpretation from the Team 4-Star had, which was if Ken can actually land his, attacks on Goku that cause stupid death, then he would still blow him up. But I do think that if Goku fought seriously the whole time, then he would probably never get a chance to actually touch him that way. Mm-hmm.
And even if he did, wouldn't he just come back even stronger?
Assuming he survived. Saiyans get stronger from their death experiences.
But then even if they die and come back, they just train and shit in their off time.
Right, he just goes off into his hyperbolic time chamber or whatever other bullshit.
Yeah, King Kai fucking training land or whatever.
And put Guru's hand on his head and say, I will unlock your potential.
Yeah.
All right, this next one comes from Miko from Miko? Miko? M-I-K-K-O. So I'm sorry Miko. If I've mispronounced your name, sir. From Finland. Let's pretend that you are in charge of a major story in Shonen Jump, either the writer or the editor, and you have been ordered to permanently kill a major character of a famous Jump series in order to, quote, bump the ratings. Who would you kill, and how would you do it? Let's say you get a very generous 50 or so chapters time to do it in so that you can do the characters and well. I'm answering this for every series may take too long. I thought you were going to have us do it for one! So maybe one of you can take one piece and the other can take World Trigger. Do you have a choice between, because I have an answer that I could do for either one.
I could probably do, I could do either or. I almost feel like there'd be better series to do though. My Hero Academia and take out, I think my mind immediately went to Kirishima. Where I'm like, it's a side character, but one who I think his death would be hugely significant at that same time. Or somebody like maybe, I'd hesitate to do it because I feel like he hasn't had enough time to make himself sympathetic for what happens. But at 50 chapters, I'd say Ito would be a really interesting one to also it'd be kind of sad since he's kind of the product of someone also dying. I mean, his brother's been crippled to the point he'll never be a hero again. But just if you're a side character to kill, I feel like he'd fit that. But Kirishima, I think, is the one my mind immediately goes to as being that guy feels like he'd fit that role very well.
Yeah. If of the two choices that were posed here, I feel like if I had to kill one of the Straw Hats, then I think that I would actually choose Usopp.
Aww! He's a brave warrior of the sea!
Well, we just have, a big moment where, he sacrifices his life sort of to save the crew, and we have a moment where he realizes that, he actually achieved his dream because he was a great adventurer who, got to see the world and had a great crew and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's the only one that I could see, one of them that I could see dying and actually achieving that dream as opposed to, well, they have to get to a certain point. Like, you can't have Zoro, for example, die because he has to be the greatest swordsman in the world.
Yeah.
You can't have Luffy die because he has to, you know, get One Piece and stuff. And, but Usopp's is a bit more, you know, open-ended in that respect.
Yeah, I could definitely see
and,
that.
And I would, for one trigger, I would kill Hughes because, I kind of see like he, I kind of feel like he could die, actually like just realistically just die in that series.
See, for World Trigger, my mind went to, Jin. I feel like Jin would be the right person to go to. Like a situation comes up that he sees, he's a mentor character, but also he sees something where his death results in the best timeline. Like something happens, but he realizes by avoiding it, something worse might happen. So he chooses to kind of create the best case there. This is a little bit of Lost in my mind since that kind of plays into it. But, just that notion of him kind of making that sacrifice and you take away a mentor and a very powerful tool for all the border as well.
Yeah, I could see that, man.
All right, moving on here. Questions from Drew. Dear Chris, Rolos and tea are an unusual snack, Larios. And Nick, why Ruler of Thyme, the herb, not the measurement? I'm going to call it...
That's pronounced thyme.
Whatever. The herb, not the measurement of what has passed between two points. I don't cook a lot, Nick. I don't know your spices. Question the first. This has already been addressed. How do you think Kojiro Shinomiya would react to what Azami has done to the school? I think Kojiro would, from before the Battle of Megumi, would side with Azami because the Institute is making the perfect sous chefs, one with proper skills who would follow the recipe precisely. Just what Kojiro would have wanted. But I don't know how the current Kojiro would react. What do you think?
I think that he would be, especially because he's gotten that bond with Soma now. I think that, your interpretation of, you know, he wanted the perfect sous chefs and such, were from a time when he was focused on his own success and he was getting tunnel vision and he wasn't opening his mind to the possibilities so much. And I think that, you know, after his experiences, you know, being humbled and during that competition with Megumi and also getting to know Soma, he's got a mindset that more closely matches Soma's and Joichiro's than it does Azami's.
Yeah, I think that basically kind of fits it. And as for question two here, this is one we've gotten a lot, but in honor of Toriko's conclusion, what are your full course menus? I think we've kind of gone over these a couple times in the past.
Yeah,
so
a few times, yeah.
We've gotten that. But thank you for the questions.
Yeah, thank you. All right, next up comes from... Is this signed? This is... Oh, this person actually did sign, like, a future one. Like, we'll get to it later. Okay. what are your thoughts on the second World Trigger character popularity poll? It came out in Jump a while back, but Viz never translated it. Well, let's see here. So... On this poll, Osama took first place.
Of course he did, because he's the best boy.
Konami took second.
That was interesting.
Jin was in third, Yuma was in fourth, Izumi was in fifth, which is a little bit of random. Kazama sixth, Mi was seventh, Arafune was in eighth, Asuma was in ninth, Hughes was in tenth, and Chika was 11th, Tachikawa, Katori. How is Katori that high? Fucking hell. I mean, for the most part, it's really not surprising. Like, a lot of the cool, you know, guy characters are high ranking, which for the type of characters that are featured in World Trigger and the kind of reader base that it has, honestly not incredibly surprising. And I know that, Chica's got a little bit of fan hate against her. We discussed it a ways back when someone linked us to, like, the most hated female characters in Jump, and she was relatively high up there. So, it's honestly not all that surprising to see.
Yeah. One of the, like, more surprising things was how some characters who ranked in, like, the 20 to 50s, like, Kitora is 31st, Kagura is 26th, Renji is 36th, like, a lot of guys who are characters you think would be more popular kind of ranked.
Oh, so where's Ikoma in all this?
Yeah, I know, Ikoma's not there. I don't know if Ikoma was introduced at the time this happened.
I think he might have run fairly late, I guess. He might have shown up fairly late for when the poll was held.
He doesn't seem to show up in any of these. But there's a big mix of characters kind of amongst this. And I think it just kind of also plays to the fact that World Trigger has so many fucking characters that,
it's got a lot of characters.
It's tough to really put too much of a weight on this. Like the fact that who's eighth on this is fucking, Arafune. Arafune hasn't done shit in like a year and a half. He's just shown up and been cool looking. And that's enough to get him eighth. And it's just like, that's the kind of series this is. As a shit ton of characters, you have the few that you like, and you're probably just going to keep voting for them. Like, it's going to be tough to kind of move around too much on that.
Also, might explain why Shuni asked Katori is on there, and Bitch to Osamu Kitora is very low on the list. Like, that's all people know Kitora for. It's like, oh, she's neat to Osamu. It's like, no, she gave him the wake-up call that he fucking needed. It's like, oh, Katori's so great. It's like, whatever.
All right. Questions here from Noth4. Dear Nick, ruler of brevity is not the soul of which Shakespeare mocked the idea of having Polonia as a character who is always wrong. Say it. And Chris, if you brought back biting your thumb, it would be a subtle insult as it requires you to spit while said thumb is in your mouth, T.
When I read that, I was like, how do you spit while your thumb is in your mouth?
I mean, the way I always heard it, and maybe my English teacher is wrong, is just that biting your thumb was kind of like flipping somebody off. So, I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying to
Not for the long-winded in this, so it's a little difficult to actually ascertain where the questions are.
Let's see. Even with how fast Heroes Pacey has been with stories, has been for Fairy Tale, he's really trying to get this arc as fast as he can. Again, probably because he's sick of writing something he said he'd only do for 10 years for 10, which he highlights by doing a speed run of Final Fantasy 15 while still completing his chapter for the week with zero issue. God damn it, this is why I want a documentary for him! This is ridiculous!
I actually looked up on his Wikipedia page, there's a whole thing about, like, there's a brief summary of the process of writing Fairy Tale. And apparently they have, like, in the weekends, like, oh, play video games.
This fight also gained favor with Square Enix to jump ship to their manga division, but that's gained into Hiro's toxic relationship with his present magazine, which could be its own overly long rambling email. I haven't heard much about that, so I'd be curious to learn more. Second thing is, after slowing down thinking about them, there's a lot of things Hiro has done with the Spring and 12 that are actually interesting. Gajeel's death was really good, and though it's gotten a little forced, the presentation of Juvia's death was really good too, and how they would have been effective if Terry Teal hadn't trained us to not buy into them. A lot of powers of the Spring and 12 are very interesting, bringing people back to death who were loved and feared, or enslaving them, making robotic soldiers with their personalities. Each one of these ideas could have been their own arc, and that's what hit me. What if that's what the Spring and 12 are? Not so much great drawn-out final villains for a manga he's tired of, but a bunch of concepts Hiro is testing out to use in his next story. Do you guys think this idea has any credence? And if you do, would you like to see some of these rushed ideas and fairy tales expanded upon and given their own arcs in Hiro's next manga? If so, which ones?
I mean, there are a few ideas that we've talked about. So it's like, oh, you know, if they give this some more time, then it would be more interesting. And it seems like we say that every month or so with Fairy Tale these days. And I think that there is actually a fair amount of credence to the idea, considering the number of ideas that Hiro has recycled from Rave Master, according to you. So.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there is that. I don't know if they're necessarily ideas for a final arc, but they're ideas worthy of a final arc. Like, if this is the end of Fairy Tale, you do want to have your villains have magic that feels up to that sort of snuff. So the idea of being like a copy magician and a magician who deals with people's memories and bringing them back, like, you just want to have powers that feel up to that scale. Maybe it's a chance for them to try it out, but I don't know if they're necessarily going to be like, oh, these are tests to see what my next series will be about. Because who knows what his next series may be about. It may be something where powers aren't like a possibility of even happening or something like that. You know, in Rave Master, it worked because like certain characters had stones that were able to basically have these sorts of powers or things like that. But his next series, I mean, he did a monster hunting series for a little bit. I don't know if characters would have had that power kind of capability. So who knows?
Okay. And so the previous question and this one are from AJ. So there you go. Since Chris has become quite invested in the relationship with Osamu and Kitora, I wanted to know your thoughts on what was revealed in the attraction chart that Ashihara released in the data book last year. And there's a link to an image here. It's a very interesting chart. I think I'll go ahead and link it in the chat for everyone to look at. But basically, it puts a shit ton of characters on this graph where their preference for a romantic partner goes on a scale between well-behaved and composed and energetic and cheerful, and then good-looking versus good personality. And so I make a note of, you can see that Kitora has a preference for someone with good looks and Osamu for someone with a good personality. So do you think that Osamu has the looks and Kitora the personality for this relationship to work? You are the master of this ship, so it's important to hear your take.
Here's the thing, guys. Sometimes opposites attract. All right? You're saying this right here. This is what they ideally want. If you're entering this into a dating profile, this is what they'd be like. You don't realize what you want until it's actually there. And I think that they realize what they mean to one another, and that's why they're going to work out that way. All right? That's what it is, guys. This is love.
I want to say, I actually have a couple of things to say about this. I actually agree with your main point there. You know, just your ideal, preferences for a partner do not in any way reflect who you're actually going to fall in love with. Mm-hmm. I mean, that does just happen all the time where someone's like, oh yeah, you know, I want to meet someone who's like, you know, has like a degree in marine biology and just like all these like specific things. And it's just like, oh, you know, you just end up dating someone and you find out that you really like them and they're nothing like the ideal that you thought that you wanted and stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is that if we're actually going to go based off of this scale and like assume this is going to be important, I think that you also have to consider that, it's not just a matter of they're on this half of the chart and this half of the, and, this half of the chart, but also how far, down they are. Like, Kitora is a little bit leaning towards good looks over a good personality, but she's way down at the end of the scale for why someone who is well-behaved and composed over someone who is energetic and cheerful. And, I think that that is much more important to consider than as opposed to if they look good. Mm-hmm. And so, when you think about, you know, the type of behavior that Osamu has, yeah, I think there you go. So Osamu's pretty far down on the scale of having a good personality. I guess that depends on what he thinks a good personality is.
It's not anything to hide that Kitora is a bit bitchy, but just someone being bitchy doesn't determine if they have a bad personality or not, because we've seen Kitora has had very forthright and honest moments. A bad personality might be something more like a Ninomiya, somebody who's actively kind of like a bit kind of cruel in some of the ways they do things, or someone like Yuga, somebody who's kind of like just there because their parent, like the fact that Osamu is always going to know Kitora didn't have a big try on well either, and that she worked hard to get there, I think is going to kind of always help in that benefit. The fact that he always knows she's gone through a lot of what he has.
It's also interesting to see certain characters on this chart who are, you know, the real outliers for it. For example, like the person who leans the hardest towards having a good personality is Kinuta. The person who leans hardest towards they've got to look good is fucking Katori.
Of course she fucking
you
does.
You vain bitch. And then like way down at the end of, oh, they've got to, you know, have good behavior, be composed is Yuzuru. Which kind of, I guess, really goes towards explaining why he's attracted to Chika.
Yeah. It does kind of go to show that a little bit. He doesn't care about looks or personality so much. He just wants someone on that level.
Yeah. There's also another question related to the data book. It was revealed that Kitora was Ashihara's favorite female character in the big Q&A section. Good. And just recently in Volume 17's Back of the Book character notes, Ashihara revealed that Kitora was one of his new favorite female characters. Which is funny because he spends the rest of the profile mentioning negative traits about her, like how she gained popularity by giving herself bigger breasts than normal with her try-on body, and ripping off the designs of both Nasu and Kunami's uniforms, since they're both popular. That's fucking great.
Do you guys think Ashara prefers writing strong but flawed female characters, or do you think that he is just revealing his kink for Mean Girls?
Maybe a bit of both, who knows?
They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. I think it is funny that Kitora was known as being his favorite character, and I still always find great how when he initially created the character, he's like, yeah, she was kind of bitchy and the creators noted that, so I guess gave her bigger boobs and no one argued with it anymore. Like, it is just kind of funny. He's like, I do think he likes adding kind of flaws into them. And like,
a great sense of humor that he's got in those character section, dude.
And there's so many, there's just a wide range of personalities out there that I think these are some of the ones that are most, like, it's a lot of his complicated characters, I think, are the ones he kind of likes talking about the most, just because he kind of has a lot of thoughts on those characters. So there's a lot to kind of dig into and digest with that. But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, and he might very well just like have. I mean, if you want to talk about like he has a kink for Mean Girls, I don't know. Maybe he associates that with being strong but flawed, and maybe I don't know. Maybe he does find that hot. I'm not inside of his head. I can't answer that question. But it does definitely seem as though he has a preference for that type of female character. And they're not the only two. I mean, you look at all the different female members of Border. You've got Konami there, and you've got some, Nasu Squad is a good example of that type of character. But he's also, you know, of course, can just freaking write freaking Chica, so.
Yeah. All right. Next question here from Shockwave72. Hello, radically outlandish Lost Legends of Theory and yellow righteous outgathering tachyons.
I don't know what the fuck that's a reference to, either of those.
Well, they're both our names, just in like a acronym form. But I don't know if the acronyms and spells are supposed to mean anything. Question one here. So Hancock, Noelle, Uraraka, Megumi, and Erina attend a class about dealing with their shonen male class crushes taught by Boruto Timeline, Hinata, and Chi-Chi. How quickly does this go awry?
Very quickly.
Well, I mean, Hinata would just sit there like with her fingers pushed together, just be like, well, and then you... Well, I mean, from my experience, and Chi-Chi's like, just fuck them and have kids! Fuck them and have kids! They can't go anywhere then!
Impress him with your strength by fighting him in a martial arts tournament, and then trick him into marrying you!
You know, knit him a scarf and really work up the courage.
Take it! Take it! Take it! Take it! Take it! Take it! Just screaming in front of all their faces.
Like Orihime is brought in as a guest lecturer one year.
Put up a shield so that you can help him.
And then take him to an alleyway and rape him!
Just, I'm telling you, just have his kid, then he can't leave!
I love the follow-up questions to this, though. Yeah.
Does the perverted photo booth show up to cause chaos? Where he's just like, ladies, what you're all forgetting is...
I'll tell you what men want.
You all have tops, and they have yet to have been taken off. That will help tremendously.
So you mean we should, like, flash those?
Well, you should flash somebody.
I think we should all take off all of our clothes and see how that feels.
I think we should practice now. I'm actually well ahead of you because I'm naked. Don't you feel bad now?
He's like, oh no, those clothes look so itchy. You should take them off and burn them so you don't have any clothes in the future.
Only keep your socks on.
Do the girls...
Why?
It's hotter that way.
I mean, you'll get uncomfortable.
It's tick season, and you don't want to get Lyme disease when they bite your feet, but not your beautiful bottoms. Do the girls of Fairy Tail, who I admitted because, to quote Nick during the Lego part of my last question, fuck that, try to force their way in? No, because the girls of Fairy Tail...
I think that they seem to have better luck than Erina and Hancock and Noelle and Uraraka and Megumi.
Yeah, like, they actually... They go for it, right? Essentially?
Levi and Gajeel are in a relationship.
And at this point, Yuffie has really... never made her thoughts on Gray secret, per se.
And she's had mixed luck on that front. The only one that you can really... I guess you could kind of classify... Lucy and maybe Urza in that, oh, the, the shonen protagonist's love interest who has difficulty making their feelings known to him, category. But, even with that, like, just the way the hero writes is different. So I think that that issue that they have is not so pronounced as, the others.
All right. Question two, a chopped version of a Shokugeki, but instead of all the students of Polaris, we have Sanji, Komatsu, Soma, and Bambino. Who wins?
I mean, I think that you gotta go with Komatsu.
I'd go with Sanji, actually. I think the thing with that is you don't have control over the ingredients, so Soma's kind of going to be out on that just because he doesn't know what he's going to have. And Komatsu's great when he works with, like, the best of the best ingredients. I don't know how he'd fare with, like, against Sanji. I mean, I guess he has food luck, which I guess applies to even shitty, not shitty, but, like, common food. But I think Sanji would just be the best all-around chef and be able to make something out of that.
Fair point. Bambino would be first eliminated, let's be clear on that.
question three.
He is mortal levels of chef.
Yeah. Have either of you listened to the scripted duels hosted by YCS Events? If not, what's your favorite? If you have not, they are duels where they have two decks based off of characters from the anime, and voice actors read the scripts and follow the rules of the anime a bit more. I have not heard of this before, but it does sound very interesting.
Yeah, and they've got... have these, like, special events, and they've held something like close to 20 of these, of the scripted duels. And yeah, I've seen a couple of them, and, the one that I saw most recently was they had the voice actors for Pegasus and Merrick square off. I really love whenever they have, Pegasus on there because he gets really into it. Yeah, I mean, it's really good fun because a lot of the time they'll, you know, be demonstrating like a new card that's recently come out or a group of new cards that have come out. And, they have this pretty well scripted, duel using real cards. And, it's great fun.
When it said it's scripted, like they have all the cards planned out ahead of time for when they'll draw them and things like, okay, so it's all fake. It's like they're actually playing the game and reacting to
it. It's not fake, Chris. It's predetermined. There's a difference.
That's true. It's still real to me, damn it. Yeah, and it does sound kind of interesting. I'll have to check that at some point. And question four. Chris, is it possible to get you to do a Hearthstone tutorial? Perhaps show us all how to play a game as a Patreon goal. Perhaps a deck built by WMNR's audience to help you out. Here's the thing. One, Hearthstone has a very good tutorial in and of itself that's going to be able to explain the game far better than I will. Two, I don't know if a deck built by the audience would be good for teaching you with, because I feel that our audience would just vote me to have to use really shitty cards that are bad and don't work well together with one another. Three, Hearthstone is a very expensive game, and they might be picking cards that I don't own and would have to, like, craft and buy packs to get, essentially. So, I would be more than happy to show people how to play the game. Just know I am not a very good player to be teaching people, because I am not amazing at the game and do not play it enough to have all the cards, essentially. But I will tell you, right now, Taunt Warrior is bullshit, and I hate playing against it, and yet I'm still using it because, fuck it, I want to climb the ladder as well. So, there is that. Alright. I don't know. Nick, are you still here? I think Nick may have disappeared for a quick moment here, so we will... Oh, yeah, Nick said... No, never mind, that was my message. I don't know where Nick is. Nick may have disappeared forever, guys. Who knows? We'll continue on without him in the interim. Greetings, Nick, Y Ruler of Time and Rolo T. Questions for you. I've run out of funny names. This is from Shotfried Schold Ilf. I don't know exactly how to pronounce your name, but I think I gave it a good try. Not so long ago, I went through a phase where I started to despise manga and anime. I felt it was nothing but bad writing, shameless fan service, and only a few good ideas used over and over again. Essentially, I had a case of Miyazaki syndrome. I was able to get out of this phase, but my question is, have you ever had a similar experience in manga or otherwise? I feel like we may have answered this question before, actually, at some point. Yeah, some of the other questions in here, I definitely feel like I've answered before, but to this point, I have this with a lot of things relatively frequently, that notion of, anytime you've ever felt like you've gotten tired of something. I have that with a lot of different things. I had that with video games at one point. There was like an entire year where I just didn't play video games at all. Had no knowledge of them. Different things like that. But I know we answered this question before, so I won't dig too much into it. Nick, are you here?
I'm back now. Yeah, yay! I disconnected completely for a bit, but I'm back.
Yeah, it's all good. All right. I will take us to our next question then, and you can pick up from there then.
All right, cool.
These are questions from Satellite of Love. Is this the ones we talked about before? No, okay, this is different. Dear Y Ruler of your milkshake and Royolo Y'all with cheese.
Royolo Y'all.
Royolo Y'all.
Like royal.
Yes. Question. If Mokuba was kidnapped and taken to the neighbor world, and Kaiba had to enlist the help of 5 border agents who must also be good at duel monsters to help save him, which 5 agents would Kaiba most likely succeed with? All right.
I feel like it would be that group. I feel like it would be that group that Yuma went to get meet with.
Yeah,
they seem like an appropriately dorky selection.
I feel like, yeah, there's definitely like a group of guys out there who'd probably be really into fucking Yu-Gi-Oh and Duel Monsters and shit like that.
In between doing their rank wars training and stuff, they're just like, okay guys, let's get ready. Like they host an anime club on the side and shit. There's got like knowing the kind of people that we've seen at Border, there's a ton of dorks in there. So he probably wouldn't have too much difficulty finding some good eight.
Oh, well, here's
who also play a fucking card game.
You'd want to bring Jin. 100% Jin can cheat. He can see the future.
Right.
So he's good to have in there in general. You'd probably want to bring, I feel like Kitora would be good for some reason. Like, just that notion of, like, well, like, you want people who are, like, serious and dedicated. Like, here's the thing. You want to almost play with the idea, like, no, you need all these goofy personalities with their stupid theme decks. But, like, no, if you want someone who's just going to win, somebody who's going to be like, well, these cards are just way too overpowered. I'll use all of these. I feel like that'd be Kitora. Like, she'd just be able to look at it and just, like, she's worked so hard.
All right,
like,
I made a Chaos Emperor Dragon Yata Garasu lock deck. Okay.
Yeah. All right, good to go. Yeah, essentially. So, I feel like she'd be good in there. Kagayora, because he can also, again, he can cheat. He can know what their plans are just by listening to their emotional feelings. Yuma, again, good at lying. He'd be like, is that a trap card? They're like, no. He's like,
no.
Yes, it is. Basically, everyone who can cheat. I want everybody who can cheat at the game to come along.
So my answer was the dorky assholes who would be playing a card game anyway, and your answer was the ones who can cheat.
The ones who can save Mokuba by cheating. Like heroes. Also, which chef from Food Wars would tag along for the journey?
That's a weird question.
I feel like Alice would. She's so curious about things and just wants to hang out with them. Like,
how do you play this card game?
Yeah, exactly. She'd be like, she could also be the person who's like, what does this card do? And Katara's like, it lets me win. That's all I care about. She'd be like,
oh
like,
man, Katara and Alice would be a great interaction. Like, Alice would have some sort of really annoying nickname for her that Katara would hate.
All right, Kiki, don't call me that or I'll rip your cunt off. She's like, that seems harsh. We should be besties.
So what's with that guy with the glasses? Do you have a thing for him or something? No. I'm going to tweet about this.
She's like, you get the fuck off Twitter.
Oh, man, I don't have any bars out here in the neighbor world. all right. This one comes from Wensleydale Cheddar of the Hidden Cloud, I guess. Dear Roller B and Raikage of Time, 2020.
Yay!
Not sure whether you got this before, but just to resurrect the idea of WMR plays, would you be interested in doing a playthrough of Undertale? I recently got into the game and thought you playing it might be fun to watch, especially since it's so story and character heavy, you could voice every character in it. It's influenced by anime a lot, so it would also be topical, I suppose. Plus, Chris, if you were to ad-lib Sans, you can subject Nick to many, many intentionally terrible puns. Think about it.
My puns are amazing. I don't know why I had to say that. My puns are brilliant on levels you cannot comprehend. I do have Undertale, and it is a game I want to LP. My notion for that game, though, is I want to record it, like, off stream and stream it, like put it up like a, I don't know what the way to, like a let's play that's not live streamed essentially. So right, I kind of edit it down a little bit, but also not have outside influences coming in. Cause from all I've heard, it's a game with a lot of very important story elements to it. And it's not great to just play that game on the notion of what's going to make the audience you're listening to right now the happiest, or having other people talking while you're trying to play the game or anything like that. Like, it's not that kind of game where there's breaks where other people need to, like, speak and things like that. So I definitely will play it at some point, but it'll probably be, like, when I do off-stream, essentially, and probably just solo.
Okay. Number two, I recall a discussion on Odar about whether the scene with Mary's funeral would be more or less powerful if she hadn't talked. As it's your go-to moan for emotional scenes in manga, I wonder, what are your fourth sense about this matter? Do you think it too corny and would have preferred her to stay a silent object and a metaphor for Usopp's general usefulness, role on the ship, and inferiority complex, or the opposite?
This is actually a very good question. I could definitely see why people say it takes away from the scene for the ship to talk. For me, it always makes for one, it makes sense because we know that the ship is literally alive. The ship showed up to save them. The ship has a spirit that is a manifestation of the ship's soul that Usopp has seen and interacted with before. Like it is alive. So for that reason, it speaking doesn't mean. Like, it doesn't damage anything, because I'm like, of course it would speak, it's a ship. And it didn't, it's not like the mouth of the ship started to open or anything like that, it's just that...
It turns into, like, an extra cartoony little character. Oh, hey guys, we went on lots of adventures together!
It starts screaming like, oh, I'm on fire! Oh, why did I turn into a physical form just to be on fire? It hurts so much! Oh. I could definitely see it on that. I think it definitely means more to me that it did have that because that's, I think, what gets me super emotional when the ship itself is the one apologizing because it's sorry that it wasn't able to sail with them any longer and that it has to go away like this. Like, that's what makes it really sad to me. I think the scene would still be sad without it because it's all the characters thinking about something like this. It's meant all this much to them, but it's the fact that the ship had a life that makes it so this loss of the ship is so powerful. It would be a little silly if the ship literally had nothing about it that felt personified at all and was just like, they're like, hey, the ship's broken, let's get rid of it. And everyone's sitting there crying their eyes out over it. It's the fact that the ship has a life to it and that some people deal with it better than others. Like Zoro still deals with it the way he would, but you can see all these characters see it's like a person, a part of their crew who's dying.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's difficult to answer because there's so much build up to the death of the Mary that, you would have to change it all in order to say, like, would it be more powerful if it hadn't talked? So yeah, it difficult to say because then it would be an entirely different build up to its destruction.
And I feel like if you didn't care for the ship talking, you weren't going to get that emotionally invested into the loss of the ship anyway. Like, if you're a fan of One Piece, I feel like the ship talking means more to you because that's just kind of the tone and the way the story presents itself, and you're going to be able to get into that. All right. Questions here from Tropical Blitz. Greetings and salutations, Chris, Lord Von King, Duck, Quack, Duck, something, something of Space Lyrios. And Nick, the prince of all super rulers of times, Freeman. A new year, a new month, and a new round of questions from this one obnoxious fan who can't seem to get around that he shouldn't be asking so many fucking questions in his emails. Alright, questions for Chris. Now this is a bit of a personal one. Fair enough. As the younger host of WMR, wait, I thought it was the older one.
You're older than me, you're like 4 months older than me. Or, yes. I mean... There's a bunch of questions that seem to rely on, wow, Nick sure is an old man, isn't he? You're like, I'm younger than Chris.
Oh, it's like, I thought I was the older of the two of us.
I think this is just a mistaken impression that people get. Like, people have always thought, like, ever since I started making videos, that I'm a lot older than I actually am. Like, when I started off, I was like 20, and people thought that I was 30, so...
Yeah, that is a curious thing.
It's the facial hair and it's the voice. Like I'm the same age as Chris. We're only a few months apart, and he's actually the older of us.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Okay. Question one: what does it feel when you learn some of the mangaka you get recommendations for are the same age as you? I mean, you and I are the same age, having the same birthday, but I feel like we are more of normal folk. You know, do we have the same?
Maybe that's why Tropical wants to believe that I'm older.
We have normal jobs, normal hair. Sorry, Nick, if you're still here. Young. Again, sorry, Nick. This is so brutal.
Like, what the
Nick,
fuck?
You old fat balding shithead. Why are you still here? Like, oh, why? Essentially, how do I feel knowing some manga are the same age that we are? Look, if you want to, like, let this be a moment where you, like, I hit, like, an existential crisis and have a midlife crisis over the notion that, like, people I'm talking about are at the same age or younger than myself, it's not going to happen. I had this moment a long time ago when I finally realized new players being drafted to the NFL were younger than I am.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, this part just passed me by.
I'm at that point now where I have to, like, when I look up, like, wrestlers' ages, I'm like, that guy's the same age as me. He better get called up to the main roster soon.
Yeah. You're like, oh, you're going to die and no one will care about you.
Or you'll be like Ty Dillinger and you'll be super old when you get called up.
Two, to continue from that thought, whatever started the whole Nick is going bald joke? I think it was just a joke.
The fact that I've been going bald for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, very gradually. But,
No, it was a joke you made one time because you saw something with my hair and you were like, man, it must be nice to have hair like that or something like that. And I was like, oh, I guess that's something I could call out on the show or something along those lines. It was just some comment that came out.
I remember, like, the first time we met in person, like, you noticed that, like, my hairline was receding. And this was when I was, like, 20.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my hair just has gradually been receding more and more ever since I, you know, got out of my teens. I've been gradually just going bald the way that a lot of men do. Mm-hmm. The comments about you, because Tropical makes a note of, like, he seems to have a healthy head of hair. It's like, well, that's because you don't see the back of my head. Like,
and I mean,
I've got a big old bald spot back there.
Guys, not for nothing. I don't want to, like, destroy your illusion. I'm balding too slowly. Like, my hairline's thinning. I just grow it out to help kind of alleviate the fact that that's happening, and it's not happening mm-hmm. as rapidly or as noticeably. But, yeah, I'm getting older as well. And part of that.
No pattern baldness is just a thing, you know?
Yeah. All right, enough jokes. Seriously, isn't it kind of fascinating how much manga could get when they get big? Is there a question here? This looks like this is like a long fucking comment.
It's a long comment that essentially boils down to, it seems like mangaka who hit it big seems to get a lot because of all of the different stuff that comes out that's related to manga, you know, tie-in movies and radio dramas and live-action plays and all that stuff. And I think that honestly, success, in at least monetarily speaking, for all that stuff really boils down to what kind of contract they've got mm-hmm. in terms of how much of that they're going to see. I do remember seeing once, because there's a lot of information on Konomi, the author of Friends of Tennis, that he was like one of the top paid mangaka in the world, and he's got more money than he'll probably ever really need in his life. As a result of all the different things that are related to Prince of Tennis that have come out. But you could be an incredibly successful in terms of fame, writer or creator or whatever like that. But if you haven't gotten written into your contract, you know, like retaining movie rights and stuff like that, you might not see nearly as much of that money from a very successful franchise as you could.
Yeah. I mean, that was a huge deal when the Avengers movie came out, is that most of the Avengers weren't making all that much money. And Robert Downey Jr. kind of like put his foot down and said, like, we're negotiating everybody's contracts because you guys deserve, like, need to pay these guys more than they were. Marvel was extraordinarily cheap with their actors at the start of things. Like, you know, it sounds like someone could be in something famous and have a lot of fame, but they may not be necessarily rich because of it, because that doesn't, like, you know, being popular doesn't necessarily equate to making a lot of money.
That's why you see a lot, like, some, actors and creators and stuff like that are considerably easier to get for convention appearances and stuff mm-hmm. because they need that pay from the convention more than someone who has gotten the amount of money that they should have from the product that they were an essential part of.
Yeah, it's usually where a lot of, like, spats, too, between, like, creators and people who work with them come from, is usually a lot of people are like, I really wish I had made more money off that, or mm-hmm. just different things of that nature. Question four is regarding resending in guest recommendations. Yes, you can resend in any of your guest recommendations. You can send them in or tweet them to us. We definitely keep track of those and guests are something we are definitely going to keep trying to get for this podcast, so feel free to keep sending them in. It's something I'm probably going to have more talks with Nick about, because maybe we'll have to look into alternate ways of doing them. But it's definitely something I would like to do for the show. I don't know if every guest we're going to get is going to be someone who's good for weekly manga recap, but they might be interesting to talk to and have in some other kind of format, essentially. So there are a lot of people I think we'd be interested to talk to. And final question here to Nick. Since we established in a previous question that you'd eat Bald Eagle Pop-Tarts for lunch and Florida Gators for dinner before punching Miyazaki in the face victorious, now is the time for you to decide how well your co-host, a man known to have grown bored from running marathons he now challenges with death march marathons across the wild, wild west, would do in a death match of his own.
But, given his rugged nature and strong physique, his challenges would be the Sinister Six of Weekly Manga Recap.
Oh, no!
Done. Choose the top six strongest, smartest, and most challenging guests you've had over the years on the podcast to take Chris mano a sixo. But not in a death match. Come on, this is Chris, a civilized man, not a couple of brutes run on hatred of mankind and anime he created, and another on despising chocolate and joy. Chris will face them maybe in Hearthstone or something.
I was going to say, like, I think I might be able to win a fist fight against most of our, like, Annalise, Tekken, and Jeff. I'm pretty sure I could beat all in a fist fight. Benz, I already know he can. He bruises like a fucking peach and bitches he'll about like it for
running,
years.
He'll run charging towards you. Prepare to die, Fetso. Trip over his own feet and die.
I mean,
I think that Sway could give you trouble. He owns a sword.
Yeah, that's, he spent all years honing the blade, so.
And we already know that Jake could kick your ass, so,
That's the thing. I'm trying to remember all the guests we've had, and I guess those could pop in there.
I don't think we've quite hit double digits for, guests.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back, there's a lot of people who are on, like, I think we had,
Chrissy was in one of the earliest ones.
Benzai. Kerber for
once or maybe twice.
We had Steve Mann on an episode at one point.
Yeah.
Norse Crow was on the, Mr. Crow was on our, episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's
Happy Nick. Happy Nick.
Yeah, I think that does put us into double juice then.
Alright.
Oh, there okay.
So we could definitely, right.
If we had to narrow down to six, then I think that Annalise, Jeff, Tekking, you'd have to include on there. Mm-hmm. Yes, because, you know, they're the ones who have put in repeated appearance. Jake's also made multiple appearances. I think that we can include him.
Chris technically did, although it's been a while since their last appearance.
Yeah. It was just a long time between them. You're right. And, and Benzai, because why not?
Fuck, I just want to beat up Benzai.
Why can't we play a good game?
If they're all fighting me in Hearthstone, I mean, Hearthstone's a game where fucking RNG is a very viable factor in the game to win with, so very easily I could just get crushed by all of them because I get shitty draws, or they're just like, oh, I played fucking Yogg and you lose. I'm like, god damn it.
All right. Okay. We'll do maybe one or two more of these.
Okay.
Okay, this one comes from... Is this signed?
Sieg.
Hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Sieg. Okay. Hello, Nick. Zawarudo. Now I truly rule time. And Chris, rolling around at the speed of over 60... Rolling around at the speed of over 60 kilometers per hour because Highway Star is after me.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I like both of those.
That's weird. With the anime adaptation of Diamonds Unbreakable having recently ended at the time of this was sent, I have a couple of JoJo questions. Most likely Chris can answer these better, but Nick can try to provide an answer if he can. Number one, what are your favorite openings to the JoJo anime? You know, the one.
I think the song I'd listen to the most naturally would be Crazy Noisy Bizarre Town, which is the first opening to Part 4. But as far as, like, watching the openings, one, you can't, like, watch Part 3's opening and not love when you get to the point when Dio just interrupts the song, freezes time, and just takes over singing the rest of the song. That's so awesome. And I don't want to spoil, but they actually do something similar to that in Part 4 then, too, when it gets to the final, like, when it starts getting to, like, the final scenes of it as well. Where, like, some of the stuff happens to the theme song in Part 4 as well. Like, those are just so awesome. I love that the, active point to where they are in the story starts interfering with the story, like the opening itself. I think that's so awesome.
And number two, while people often talk about who's the best JoJo, the side cast is not discussed nearly as often. As such, my question is, who are some of your favorite side characters in JoJo? Not the side cast of one part entirely, but characters all on their own. Like individual favorite side characters.
Yeah. Let's see. Alright. I love, and this is note, we're not talking about JoJo's themselves, I'm assuming. Cause those leads.
Right.
My favorite side character still is probably, Okuyasu, who is the side kind of character in part four, who's just an idiot who has like, one of the most ridiculously stupid strong stands out there, but he's just too much of an idiot to use it effectively. I love him. Bukiarty from part five. He should have been the lead character, probably. He's just, like, for somebody who has such a shitty stand and concept of I punch things and zippers appear, to use it so effectively and awesome is just great. I loved him. Anasui from part six, I think he was probably one of my favorite. I've come to love Foo Fighters more from that part as well, as I've come to love the band Foo Fighters a whole lot more. So there's that. And I really liked Gyro Cipelli from part seven. But that one might be kind of cheating because he's kind of a main character. It's sort of like a dual lead in that one. So those are the ones that stick out a lot. Poco Loco I like in part seven as well because his stand is just the best kind of like... His stand just helps him avoid everything. It's just like... You just don't trip on this rock. You just don't fall down this cliff. It's just a luck stand, essentially. And he just succeeds off of it. And it tells him, it's like, oh, he's an escaped slave who just, everything goes well in his life from now forward. This is great.
Okay, then.
Yeah. He decided to run the race because a fortune teller told him of his peaking luck. And through sheer luck, he becomes one of the best competitors in the race. And he doesn't, like, he's not, like, an evil villain trying to kill the main characters. He's just like, I really want to win this money, please. So, yeah, I think those are probably my favorites. All right. We want to finish up, then, with this question?
Yeah, sure.
Man, this is a weird one to end on. But all right. Andre Golden asks, Dear Y Ruler of the Rebel Alliance and the Empire T, which Star Wars movie is better, Episode 7, The Force Awakened, or Rogue One?
First off, I'm actually going to be going and jumping into a Star Wars game after we finish this call. It's going to be over on MechaGM stream, so you can, if you want to.
Check that out. I'll have to make sure to start hosting.
Or you can also go over to MechaGM stream for that, hitbox.tv/mecha-gm. My answer for this is very simple. I really like The Force Awakens. I did not like Rogue One.
Aw. I can see that. I can understand that. It's a little tough to kind of answer that because even though they're set in the same universe, they're two very different kinds of movies, essentially.
They are very different, yes.
I would say The Force Awakens because The Force Awakens is something very, it was, even though its main complaint was that it was too much the same, it was still something new and something that push things forward. I liked what Rogue One gave, but ultimately it was kind of my one thing when I thought about the movie. It's like, it's a prequel that can't change anything. We already know how the events are going to go. And though it still told a good story with a lot of sad character moments in it, it still just was a story that was entirely, it didn't need to be told. It was satisfying. I'm glad we did get to see it, but it was ultimately very superfluous in the range of Star Wars canon. So I would say.
Yeah, and it's also like, the original trilogy, the original prequel trilogy answers a question that could have been asked. Like, how did Anakin fall to the dark side? What exactly, you know, happened? What sequence of events led up to that? Whereas this one was like, how did they get the Death Star plans?
I mean, they told us in episode four.
They did. And also they had to literally retcon how it happened in order to answer the question that nobody really was asking. But my questions, my problems with the movie have little to do with that and more to do with, God, there's a lot of terrible fucking characters in this movie. there's the droid who's awesome, and then this guy is okay.
I want the force to be.
That guy's pretty cool. That guy's pretty cool, but kind of weird. And then there's the fucking awful leads who are just uninteresting, bland stone cutouts of people.
Ooh, some viciousness there. You know, I
fucking hate that movie.
I could absolutely understand.
It's got a great climax, but I hate that movie.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if there had been more interesting ramifications of that movie, then maybe I'd be more interested, but it doesn't seem like anything that actually happened is going to change our perception of the Star Wars universe. And it's not like, oh, Jin had a kid and that kid's Rey, and now, like, holy shit, all these details are adding up or anything. Like, that's just not a part of it. It's all these characters exist in this and died within this. And now you follow the rest of the movies you've already seen. It's like, there's not much room there to actually have much weight.
I mean, there were some interesting ideas that had never been used in Star Wars really before, at least in the main movies, like, you know, the reprogrammed droid, this new way of interacting with the Force was kind of cool. But then there was stuff like, we use this squid to read his mind, but it breaks him, except then he shows up later and he's fine. What the fuck is this?
There was also, that entire long stretch of dealing with Forrest Whitaker's character where you're just like, why is this guy in the movie? why is he in this movie? I'm asking this. Why did we waste him in this movie? So there are those. But hey, we didn't even bring it up, but the new trailer for the new Star Wars came out. Are you
yes, it did.
Excited at all? Last Jedi?
I mean, it didn't really show me anything that got me more excited. Like,
I was
already pretty excited to see it, but then it was just like, yeah, okay, that's about what I imagined the trailer for that movie would be, I guess.
One of the biggest successes of The Force Awakens was how everything in the movie was kind of a surprise because they didn't reveal anything. Like, the trailer didn't tell me what the movie was going to be about. They only showed Finn using a lightsaber. They kept so much of it under wraps that I had no idea what the plot is. I have that with this movie, and I'm like, you know what? I'd like a little bit more to actually know what the plot of this is. Because right now, it just looks like Luke Skywalker is just going to... he's just going to Kevin Costner this movie down, where he's just like, Rey, why bother trying? I know you're Superman, but we dammed up that river, and it ended up drowning cows down the way, so why do we even try? That's what I'm saying. Why do we try?
Well, he says in that movie, the big line is that trailer is, it's time for me to, like, end the Jedi. It's time for the Jedi to die. I think that probably what they're going to have established is, like, it's essentially time for the next evolution of practitioners of the Force to come about. Not to have Sith and Jedi, but to have, you know, some sort of users who strike a balance between them.
Yeah.
And that's what he wants to have happen. No more Jedi, no more Sith. Rey, you will be the first of a new generation.
And I can absolutely get that. Alright, now I'm confused, Nick. We know we talked about at the beginning of this episode how my question to you was what animal you'd be.
Yeah.
I just looked at Twitter, and right now trending on Twitter is hashtag otter gift party. And I'm like, Nick, what's happening?
go be with your people, Chris.
I'm off now. Scamper, 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 scamper. So guys, that is going to do it for our Q&A this month. I hope all you guys had fun. Once again, if you want to answer the question we posed at the beginning of this episode, which is if you could pick a manga, a theme song for any manga character, or either Nick or myself, what would it be? Send that question in to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, as well as sending any questions you have. We are slowly but surely getting through our questions. We're digging in. We're into the new year. We're into 2017 in our questions now. So we are going to be catching up, and don't feel shy or unwilling to put your questions out there because you're worried we won't get to it. Don't worry about that. We'd rather have more questions than we can answer than not enough. So keep sending your questions. Again, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com.
And we might end up having something else for you guys in the next few days because we're going to be trying to get out all of our bonus stuff for you guys very early this month.
Yes.
And then, of course, we'll be having our regular episode next week.
Yes, we're going to have a regular episode. I'm probably going to be doing some streaming starting on Sunday then. Ooh, excuse me. Tomorrow I'm going to be doing some other things. But hey, people listening to this after the fact don't need to hear all this nonsense. So we'll just wrap it up here and say thank you everybody for listening. I hope you guys all had fun, and we'll catch you next time when we do our May Q&A. Our Q&A, if you will. Ha 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 ha